This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I got me
marvelous.
Fine,
Maisel's good.
The marvelous
Mrs. Maisel. Loud and
a couple of
the marvelous Mrs. Maisel goes. The marvelous Mrs. Maisel goes. Deb, Mrs. Maisel goes. Welcome to the marvelous Mrs. Maisel goes. I'm Ray Romano. I'm standing in for Kevin.
Deborah.
He couldn't.
I'm Deborah.
He couldn't.
I sound just like you.
Oh yeah, and you're pro.
And I say my own name.
And you're very pro-life.
I'm pro-life. Don't hurt babies. I protect everyone, born or unborn.
You know what? Kevin's coming in right now. Yeah. I'm being replaced. Oh, come on. Come on. Give Ray a break. This isn't my natural place to. Do my thing.
That's true. I'm also. Why can't I respond to the normal voice?
Oh, look, Alice is coming
in.
Hey, Ray.
Hi. Oh, thanks,
hey,
Ray. Thanks, Deb.
You're welcome.
Oh, what a nice pair of folks. You know, they say that you really start to emulate the qualities of the people you work with the most. What qualities of mine do you think you've started to emulate?
I wish it was punctuality, girl, because damn, I can't seem to do it.
Hey, you got here 1 minute before our scheduled recording time, so that's
true.
Good.
That never happens, but it's because there was a place to park.
Yeah.
And there never usually is.
I've started doing the method where I'll tell the guest 15 minutes later than it actually is. I didn't do it this time.
I do that too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hashtag.
Hashtag roast my ass.
Hashtag
I just listened to the trolley episode, and I gotta say, good app.
That was a good app. What a sweet boy. I really do. Can I say
my favorite part was when I called him Woke Kendall.
He is. He's someone who, my affection for him grew so much over the course of doing
that
show. To the point where, I see him on a regular basis more than some of my other friends. More than you, I think.
Yeah, even. To know him is to love him.
To know him is to love him. And you know what? To know our guests today is to love her as well. Let's introduce her.
Yeah, it's weird that we just talked about another guest in a really nice way before introducing.
We'll see if she measures
such
up.
A strange
it is a comparison
intro.
And competition.
But he's not here, so.
She's a wonderful stand-up. She's amazing. She's hilarious. She's the wonderful Mrs. Warehouser. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Kaitlyn Warehouser.
Thank you.
Kaitlyn Warehouser.
Thank you. It was so nice of you to speak so kindly of that other guest.
Of that other guest. Ad Lang.
Phantom guest. Well, Ray Romano and Deb.
We became friends before I saw you, Kaitlyn, do stand-up, whereas Alice and I have the opposite relationship where I saw her do stand-up.
Which one do you think is
friends.
Better? Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, interesting. Interesting question.
Yeah. Relationship-wise.
It's always a competition with us.
But the last time I was in Portland, Oregon, I saw Kaitlyn do a set, and
is it better than me?
She slayed.
I forgot that you hadn't seen
up until,
any stand-up.
Yeah. No, that
and
was my first time ever seeing stand-up.
Forever. Yeah. He's kept himself away. Like a little kept nun.
Yeah.
A nun for stand-up.
You want to compartmentalize that part of your life. You don't want to bring the work home with you.
Mm-hmm.
No,
really
but
important.
Kaitlyn is a wonderful and amazing stand-up. She just finished a residency of sorts in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
In the greater Santa Monica area.
West Side Comedy Theater.
So, well, yeah, West Side. So nice.
And the original concept of this podcast was to have on only female stand-up comedians. We have strayed from the premise.
Yeah,
starting
to the point that I to the point where I forgot that was even
a thing.
I was like, "Oh right, yeah, we said that at the beginning."
Yeah, in the first season, and then it's like we ran out of people. And we're like, "Trolley, do you want to do it?"
We ran out of people.
Trolley's an angel.
It's not. And what it is like women, they be shopping. You know, the thing. What we would find is that we'd book somebody and they'd be like, you know,
what
no,
insight on the
I'm
marvelous
shopping.
Mrs. Maisel Goy's podcast?
You know what? Gender's fake. So are my eyebrows. Let's go.
Did we say that we're the Maisel Goys? Did we do I'm Kevin, I'm Allison, we're the Maisel
Goys?
Oh,
no. You didn't.
Oh, ooh. No.
Start over.
It's cursed.
Okay. Start it over.
Really?
Reset.
Welcome to the marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goys. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Alice.
And we're
the Maisel Goys.
Oh,
oh, God.
Thank God.
Kevin, your eyes are bleeding. God.
No, it's just we didn't do it. We didn't bless the podcast in that way.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So then it's cursed, but now it's okay now.
Do you think maybe
we reversed the curse?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's fine.
Caitlin, you're stand up yourself. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is a show you were a fan of in season one. What does the show mean to you as a stand up comedian?
I think it would mean the same to me if I baked pies and watched Pushing Daisies.
That's a great comparison point.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like,
totally.
It's like a fun little romp into what ifs. I guess, mm-hmm. in the late 50s, mm-hmm. early 60s.
Yeah.
It's cute. The evolution of the show from season one to season two has been, like, really gratifying.
Oh.
It's a fun watch.
Mm-hmm.
There's so little that hits on, like, stand-up.
Yeah.
That
like,
it's
true.
So enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas, like, some other shows, God, there are so many.
I'm dying up
what
here.
What are we doing?
Crashing.
Yeah, I'm dying up here. That one gets in more of that, like, it's almost like a knee-jerk thing when, like, people talk about stand-up
mm-hmm.
outside of like the realm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and my parents love it. And that to me is the cutest
my parents
little sign-off
love it
in the world.
Yeah.
In season one, they were like pacing themselves through the episodes so that they didn't like watch too many too soon.
Yeah.
And my dad and my stepmom talk about like remembering stand-up in the very, very early 60s.
This
like,
is an
how
interesting.
Exciting. They're like, we love it.
Yeah. There's a lot of overlap. This is weirdly like a very communal family show.
Yeah.
Like not in the same way that Gilmore was, where it's like my mom and I are Rory and Lorelai, but it's like people reconnect with their family a lot over this.
Mm-hmm.
I remember former guest and friend of the show, Guy Branum, talking about him and his mom checking in on each other with Maisel stuff. Like
that's
they
cute.
Really share that as well. Mm-hmm. So it's something that
it's like, almost like the Orville in that way.
How's that? This is the Seth MacFarlane Star Trek parody show, The Orville. How is it like that, Alice?
You know, just it's like a connector of communities.
Yeah, The Orville's primary mission, other than to go where no man has gone before with like a fart noise or something.
I just wanted to make Caleb laugh for a full 25 seconds.
It's to connect families.
It's really good.
Maisel,
really good when we're listening.
The Orville, and Dateline. Did you see that guy last night? Yeah, okay. So it doesn't speak into like specifics of your
own.
It definitely doesn't feel informed.
And you're and so you feel like it's okay that it doesn't delve too much into stand-up at this point.
I think it would foul it.
Ooh.
I would be bummed to see that in season three.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't want it to be about stand-up at all?
No, I would like to see more characters in stand-up. I would like for mm-hmm. there to be a more robust relationship with different types of stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
But for it to go specifically into it, like, oh, and now this whole episode is like, what was the episode where it's like a cut, mm-hmm. hyper-cut?
It was like
super
like
cut,
a little montage
blah, blah, blah.
Of, yeah.
Gosh, in season one, I was so hungry for like more stand-up. Like, oh my God, show me. And
now
in season two, I'm like, oh, we're good.
It's rejiggered the expectations.
Give me some good character development. Give me some good
twists. I also
twists,
think
but
that
I'm good on stand-up.
I just listened to the Trolley episode, which is covering that.
Mm-hmm.
That one, which is episode 3 or 4?
Oh, yeah, 203, yeah.
3, and I think the other reason that was so not fun to watch is like the stand-up itself was really bad. That was a ballad. That was
a
Daniel episode.
Kayla, are you talking about the stand-up montage from season one or season two?
Where she's developing the act.
Yeah, that's season one.
I think
one.
It's season one.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think that was the first time that I was like, ugh, I'm good.
Wow. Okay.
I don't know.
Again, I've said this before. I think we actually differ a lot on this, Alice.
No, like, Kevin, I can't.
I know.
I need to be the same.
And I need to be a positive force or people will yell at me.
Or else.
What a great place to function.
Yeah, what a perfectly healthy.
Haven't slept in weeks.
Checking the tweets. Someone said something mean.
Was it me? I don't know. Gotta show it to my pastor and friends.
I feel like I don't share tweets with any pastors.
Wow.
And that's final.
Todd, he told us.
Wow.
He told us.
He stepped right out of line.
I have to keep saying this every episode of the show. I don't share tweets with pastors.
I know.
It's
at this point,
them,
it's a catchphrase.
Like, yeah, on stage, I go, I don't share tweets. And then the crowd goes,
with any pastors.
But with any pastors.
No, I don't think I care. I'm kind of on Caitlin's side about.
I don't think I do.
I don't need the stand-up. I like the stand-up adventure and journey, and I want that story. But as far as, like, the specifics and the nitty-gritty, even in 205, like, I feel like we came down pretty hard on a lot of that and her bombing, but also crushing at the same time.
God, I love that stuff,
I'm fine with it. Like, I think it's fine to be a fantasy in that sense. I'll need it to be like, well, she wouldn't have done that. Like, I'm fine with it all being very fantastical in that sense, as long as it's getting at some other emotional truth underneath what the jokes are
doing.
I just
think if we're not at the point where at this point, like, we watched an episode, she's in the Catskills still, if the next episode isn't entirely about stand-up, I'm not going to do this podcast anymore. Do you know what I mean?
You're going to quit?
That's it.
Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, do you know what I'm saying, though?
Yes.
It's been
super
so
intense.
Okay.
And patient.
So you are talking about on a story level. Then
I actually am. But what I loved out of season one was the like very I feel like this show for me has a they look at stand up from a different angle than I've seen a lot of other shows look at stand up from, and like a lot of shows about stand up really glorify things that I don't necessarily think should be glorified, and like I don't know, I guess what I really like about it was that it was showing somebody learning stand up from the ground up, but in a really like looking at, I don't know, I'm not very articulate about this.
No,
right
I know what you're saying. Like,
I think this is the time that I should leave.
Okay,
forever.
Bye. We can get Deb back if that's what you want.
I thought I was going to be able to witness.
Hi!
Wow, she's
a world famous
right
Alice storming
I was
out
the whole time. I'm Deborah from Ray. Everybody loves Raymond.
You popped
I'm
out from
Deborah.
Behind that chair. So
I live back there on a make sure there's no abortions.
Deb, are you from South Philly as well?
Yeah, a little bit, mainly.
Yeah, you know,
I grew up a little bit of here, a little bit of there.
You say an infamous Alice storm out. What, the fourth or fifth time it happens, it becomes a little less special. I will say in the room, we've
famous.
Edited it out.
World it, famous.
Of the choir famous. Here. I mean, I just sit by the chair and wait. I always seem to get on the show one way or
Caitlin,
another.
Caitlin, it happens every episode. I edit it out every episode.
I know. There's you've kept in a couple.
Okay,
though.
I'm sorry. I overreacted.
How else would I know, Kevin?
Exactly, I know. You gotta give people a little peek behind
the
curtain.
Back. Thanks for coming back.
Not too much of a peek.
I came back. I'm sorry. I was being crazy.
It's okay. Do you want to get into this episode in specifics?
I'm not ready.
Oh, you're not ready.
Absolutely not.
I like that the answer is no.
No,
I don't.
Absolutely not. I was listening to the episode where you like discovered Alice that you could do the perfect Midge voice.
Oh my god.
In the airport and like I couldn't stand it.
Really?
Like,
it grossed
you out. So good.
It grossed you out.
And I'm so bummed that that's what it is. I don't want people to know. I don't want to
that
share.
That it's a female Woody Allen?
Yeah.
That it's a female.
God, it's too good.
It's really upsetting to people.
I was like laughing and taking off my earbuds and like putting it back in. I look insane.
Oh, that is
couldn't stand it.
That's a very humbling experience, airport laughter in particular, when you're listening to a podcast where it's like one of your friends or someone that you just listen to a lot and you're laughing and no one's around
and I'm
you,
like punch
you look
drunk
like
and
a
no
moron.
Sleep. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's just like
but honestly, that's
they're like, ma'am, come with us.
It's exactly. Those moments that remind me like, oh, this isn't, you know, just tossing my voice down the well, like because that happened to you and it's happened to me.
From point A to point B so often.
My that's commute.
That's a very sweet thing to share, Caitlin. I appreciate that. So thanks for shouting that out. P.S. Brosnahan hosting SNL. Anyone
is
watch?
Is that for real?
Yeah, she did it like 2 weeks ago.
When's it going to happen?
No, it happened two weeks ago.
I'll put it on my calendar.
Guys, no. I feel misunderstood right
now.
It did.
Okay. Do you have a clip?
No, I don't have any clips.
How was it?
It was, I didn't watch all of it. I watched the sketch with Leslie Jones where it's just like the raunchy Miss Rita or something.
Oh, that's funny.
It was fine. I think she as a host was fine too. She wasn't like incredible, but you know, she held her own.
They do any Maisel?
Yeah, they did the raunchy Miss Rita, the Leslie Jones thing. But the joke was, she's raunchy. Do you guys want to talk about the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel?
I'm not quite ready, but I'll say yes.
Okay, yeah. I don't want to pressure you into if you're not ready yet.
Hashtag listen to women.
I am.
Hashtag roast my ass.
Wait, I'm getting mixed signals, literally.
Gentle roast.
It's 2:06. It is Let's Face the Music and Dance. And the Amazon Prime synopsis for the episode is, with Mitch's secret now exposed to Abe, tensions between them are higher than ever. Summer is nearing an end, with Susie fully immersed in her Steiner persona and Joel contemplating life as a bachelor. Rose takes advantage of Astrid's fragile state to learn some surprising intel about Noah. And now, of course, it's a segment we do every friggin' episode on the Maisel Goys. It's time for
12 o'clock rock, we're gonna
pop
around
the culture.
Perfect fit.
Man, my voice was hoarse on the last time we recorded 2 weeks ago. It's feeling a little better now.
Oh, I'm sorry I didn't ask.
No, it's okay.
I'm sorry. Please don't tell me about that. I didn't ask.
The joy of being in a relationship with Alice is asking a lot of questions about her and being genuinely curious. And then it's like,
the minute you launch in anything about yourself, you're like, I gotta go.
Please don't talk to me about that.
Yeah.
All right. Every pop culture reference in 2:06.
Like Rosemary Clooney.
I'm gonna be the next Lucille Ball.
You're like the next Emily Dickinson Pearl.
That old devil moon.
I'm no Dick Weber, but...
Oh, I saw her through Doll's House in high school. She made me cry.
Like he swallowed Gandhi.
And there was this kid, this 19-year-old, Jack Nicklaus. He's gonna give Arnold Palmer a run for his money one day.
Hiroshima was tense.
You wanna be Milton Berle?
God, no.
Yes,
God.
We should get going, James.
Who is she doing?
I don't know.
Guess we should get going, James. I'm
She's
so afraid this is a Peyton place.
Somebody who's a butler. Who has a butler? She's doing a British accent.
But who's James?
The butler.
Is it James Cagney? Is
it? No, it's like a James. I don't know. Yeah, I guess I just assumed it was like, you know,
it's got to be something.
Stuff.
It's not nothing.
It's got to be something.
Especially given who wrote and directed the app.
Oh.
It's got to be something.
Ever since, you know, we lost our ability to Google things, I guess we'll never know.
Yeah. Googled it so much,
did
Kayla?
You? Yes. I don't think you didn't.
I guess
that
we should get going, Jay.
The time. Sorry,
you can't Google an impression. There's no Shazam for the tone and tenor of someone's voice.
No, can you hear that?
Yeah, I typed in. Then
Alexa.
They said it like that. Yeah. Also,
Alexa always answers me like this. I'm like, Alexa. And she's like,
what?
Yeah, like that, and I'm like, what?
You know, you can deprogram the sigh,
as
she does at the beginning of answering your question.
And then I tried that, and then she goes, "Oh, I can't wait to know what you want." And I'm like, "Wow, all right, that's a little too."
But there's a few references in the supercut that I missed. I was writing down while watching it that I couldn't find later. One of them was Eddie Fisher, Elizabeth Taylor. Is that ringing any bells with you guys?
They're at the counter in like the game room after.
Okay, so I did miss that.
Yeah.
And then there's like one other one. Anyway, who cares? But
yeah,
there's like a cute lady that's reading a newspaper,
so there was stuff
that's what it was.
In the newspaper.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That Joel's trying to flirt with.
Well, he was like bullied into flirting, yeah. And then does begrudgingly. But it's interesting because Midge and Rose come in and do see that interaction.
Yeah.
So it kind of like solidifies. It's a lot of tit for tat. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, you go. Now you go.
I love how energized you guys are. It makes me feel like a proud father who's just
I'm on my 12th Diet Coke.
That's not
trying to be president.
It's not uncondescending.
No, I'm a proud daddy.
It's not.
Is it condescending to say, I'm just so proud of you? You're doing a great job.
We're
going to
storm out together. Actually, we're just going to storm you out.
That's Caitlin's cute way of saying she's going to throw me out of a window.
No, it'll be like Storm, the X-Men.
Okay, at what point in this episode did you realize, this is a Daniel episode?
Oh, the beginning.
The beginning.
With
the Flight of the Bumblebee.
Yeah.
So hack.
But Flight of the Bumblebee?
They use it twice.
Using Flight of the Bumblebee, I think it's just generally hack.
I thought it was fine.
I will
like
say it captures... Poor Abe is the actual title of this episode.
Hashtag poor Abe.
I think it captures his anxiety, his stress, his like fury, but also it is completely hack to use. Use a different.
Yeah, there's a million songs that could capture that.
Yep.
When I realized it was in that Bell Lab scene where they kept buzzing in.
That old shtick.
Yeah,
God, what a forced bit.
That like
took that. 6 or 7 minutes to get through. Yeah, but basically, Kaylin's right. The title of this episode is Poor Abe.
Yeah, that whole Bell Labs thing was pretty brutal.
He went through a lot in this episode.
The gag with the, or you're saying the stuff with his son.
The stuff with his son.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's embarrassing that like, and that they like had to take him aside and be like, you just keep wanting us to hire your son. And it's like, you have to stop asking about it. So we're just doing this because you have been so annoying. Like, it's so shitty.
It's very sad too, especially when he's like showing off and he's like, oh, yeah, they just approved my new project. And it's
and his
like,
son's like, wow, dad, yeah, wow.
God. I'd love to tell you more about it, but I think I've said all I can to someone without the nice proper security clearance. It's pretty high up stuff, son. I hope you understand.
I get it, Pop. Secret's a secret.
He gets spanked for that immediately. That's how I know it's
He kind of gets cucked by his son.
Also, if you notice, because I watched back again and focused primarily on Noah for this, and he is a stone-faced sociopath for the entire
he's a
scene.
Scary man.
It's perfectly, perfectly drawn on at P's face, and it never flinches.
Yeah, isn't that
he
wild?
Like, he even defers and like turns his head to look at his father at some point, and turns back. Like, it's just sociopath.
Yeah, yeah. So
I didn't see it before.
So that I think is the main like undiscovered territory of this show, is that he's going to murder everyone.
Season
Noah's
three.
Going to kill everyone.
It'd be like Noir.
But I was really happy that we got so much of Noah's wife.
Oh my
Astrid?
God.
She's the best.
Astrid rocks.
Said,
she put
Astrid rules.
Yes.
And I love Astrid.
And listen, it's really hard. Wait, did you see the tweet with the Mike Schur and Amy Sherman-Palladino thing?
No.
Okay. So for the listener at home,
never looks at Twitter.
there's these Hollywood Reporter round tables with like a lot of, like with different groups of creative people at different points. So like they do them pretty frequently. And there was one that they did this year, or it might have been earlier last year, with like a comedy showrunners roundtable. And it was Mike Schur, who created, you know, The Good Place, Parks and Rec, wrote on The Office forever, Amy Sherman-Palladino, Justin Simeon from Dear White People, Whitney Cummings from Roseanne when she was on that, and like two or three other people. The roundtable is incredible. Just for the Amy drops and bits and pieces through it. She talks about rape culture. She talks about Me Too stuff. She talks about differentiating from, you know, allegations and actual monster people. She has a lot of hot takes.
What
one,
a romp.
One of them was, and I'm going to try to quote this as directly as possible. She said, you know, we were writing Maisel before all the Me Too stuff and Harvey Weinstein stuff happened. And then everyone was saying like, oh, it's kind of a Me Too story of a woman's empowerment.
My show came of age for 8 episodes that I've done so far, because we've been on so long. when the Weinstein and all that started happening, and so suddenly people were like, oh, it takes on new relevance because I'm like, really? Because women have been getting a finger up their twat for like 20 years.
20?
Longer than that. It's like,
so there was a lot of drops like that.
Beautiful.
I recommend everyone watch this YouTube video. It's like an hour long. And the best part of it is Mike Schur is so quiet during it.
Yeah.
He's so quiet.
What else are you gonna
do? And there's one, because everyone else is peacocking and talking about like, they're kind of, there's a lot of bravado, like network TV sucks and we're so woke and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a moment where Amy Sherman-Palladino is talking about like broken people and messed up people and that overlap with the Me Too stuff. And she says, you know, you don't get good comedy from, you know, delightful, likable, fun people. And Mike Schur's just kind of like staring at the ground, not saying anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so,
well, The Good Place is about a bunch of broken, fucked up people. So that's what she's, I think, meant by that. It's not like you have to.
But have you read anything you've ever written on?
Yeah.
I know, right? I mean, then maybe
they never roll around in their nastiness. It's always this kind of glazed over.
Yeah.
What, with the Palladino stuff?
People. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I thought it was interesting too, because I think a lot of this in season two, Midge isn't that. I mean, she's supposed to be likable and the hero.
Right.
And
that's what I love about her, like her weird writing, is that she writes these incredible heroines that become anti-heroes over the course of knowing them, and I don't think it doesn't feel like it's deliberate.
No,
it feels like
they fall apart.
Yeah,
but because there's another thing that's being creating them that's also falling apart.
Yeah.
There's two things that are dismantling in front of our eyes.
Oh my gosh.
But I like them. That makes me like them.
And we're like, Amy, who is the character that's you on this show? And she's like, I mean Noah. And we're like, what?
No, but all that's to say, Astrid is a great character.
She propelled herself into my favorite person.
How is
this
all
episode?
That to say that Astrid is a great character?
Because Astrid is a likable, sweet person that just wants to be happy and please everybody.
I was really wondering.
And has a lot of reverence for the Jewish holidays.
She's
when other
doing
people do
the
not.
Most.
She's doing the most.
The most.
Yep. That's Astrid,
but
baby.
But she's doing it out of a place of real
respect.
Emotional. But like she's, but we're laughing because it's so sad. We're laughing because it's tragic and like miss, and it's like, it's not like she's coming in and going like, here's what I did. I fasted. And everybody goes, oh my God, we're so touched by this. And we realize what, no, it's like, everybody's like, okay, weirdo. And that's what the comedy is yeah. that it's misplaced.
No one misses her at the Polynesian dinner night.
Yeah.
You weren't there? What do you mean?
Yeah.
That's why I wasn't at the Polynesian dinner. Yeah. You weren't? Three times over.
Yeah. It's so weird, by the way, that
pitiful.
Speaking of three times over, everyone thinks Susie's a man except Abe. What was that about?
I don't know.
I love
that. So this
that.
Is...
I think that's great.
This
is
you
when
do?
They go out on the porch at breakfast to talk.
Is this a hobby?
It's a profession.
And you make money from this?
A little. Not enough, but that's the plan.
You want to be Milton Berle?
God, no.
Then whom?
I don't know. Me.
You're already you.
It's all me.
And the arrests?
How did you know about that?
Never mind how I know. What did you do to get arrested twice? They said misdemeanors. That could be many things. Was it gambling?
No.
Did you break in somewhere?
Yes, I'm the notorious cat burglar of the Upper West Side.
So you won't tell me?
No.
My God. The first time we brought you here, I was carrying you.
Aw, that part got me.
Isn't that sweet?
Who was that woman?
What woman?
The woman with us in the car last night.
Oh, I'm so used to people thinking she's a guy. I didn't know who you were talking about.
She's clearly a woman.
Her name's Susie.
I think that speaks to something special about Abe. To
I
me,
think it does.
It was almost like a signal of like, whatever is special about Midge is also special about Abe. It just manifests itself in
That's
a different way.
That's interesting.
So it's like, she sees Susie, he sees Susie. And it's like, enough with the joke of like, it's a little dude or whatever.
Also, hey... Weird that Daniel didn't write that. Like, you know, Daniel wrote this episode and directed it, and this is one episode in which people aren't constantly mistaking Susie for a man. Yeah. He doesn't go to that joke. Okay, that's weird.
Yeah, although there's some queer baiting jokes with
but,
Susie.
No, I don't know if it's queer baiting. Like, I was satisfied. I would love to hear your take on this because I was really excited that it felt like they finally are starting to, like, go there with her because she said something about how she doesn't shower in front of people. Weird. Right?
She talked about a beaver eating her.
A beaver eating her, which is like
that
I'm not saying like yay that. It's on the nose. But then the thing about how pointing out that
the room. You were redder than the ketchup.
He is so handsome
and so single.
You guys are talking about the same Felix, right? Teaches ballet, walks around in a leotard all day.
That's him.
Guys, you know he's a. Never mind.
But like.
Why can no one be gay in this show?
But I'm saying, wait. But I'm saying we know that, so now we know that Susie, if we live in a world where people know that gay people exist.
Right.
And that Susie is tuned to it, that Susie maybe doesn't, one way or another, I don't think she has like intimate like connections in her life. And like, is it because she's like, hasn't come out or whatever, mm-hmm. like maybe we're getting to it. Like, I just still hope because I really want it to happen.
Bless your heart.
Oh my God.
So
there's this cat
heart,
that lives upstairs from my house.
This is like when black people knew Trump was going to win.
Yes.
You're like,
and
no.
white people were like, there's this cat that lives upstairs from my house. Like, I'm saying cat like it's a person, but it's literally a cat. And she's really huge and white. And she sucks because she, like, I was finally getting Biscuit to come out from this. He leaves the house and then goes and hides, and it takes forever to get him out. So he was about to come out, and this dumb white cat was, like, coming up and was, like, getting in his face. And I was like, he's going to go back under the fucking thing. And so I shoot him away, and I was like, this would be cool to have a giant white cat named Privilege. That's all. Everything was to get there. An idiot. I'm sorry.
That's what we call a Maisel Goy's digression. That was absolutely worth it.
There should be a chime that plays.
Can I talk to you for a second?
Yeah, what's up?
That really hurt me.
Did that really hurt? I'm sorry. We like giving each other guff.
Sorry, 1 second, Caitlin.
I know you give really me a little more than I give you.
I know, but like, you can't give me any, okay? Because I'm really sensitive. Yeah, I can't take it. I can dish it out.
Okay.
I can't take it.
Have you considered that you might be a form of weather?
I don't think this is
like snow, but smaller. Like a tiny version of snow.
One flake?
Yeah, just one of them.
One flake?
Why was it like that?
Me?
One flake?
Please?
Yes, but about Susie's sexuality, they keep dancing around it, but never quite getting there.
No, because they're not allowing her to actually be a closeted gay person.
I thought...
That's not... They won't let it happen. And this is something maybe that's frustrating to me on a couple levels, is because they allow her to be ashamed of her body and puts in two different times in the series where it's like, I don't even look at what's going on down there. And then weirdly is only comfortable taking a bath.
When she gets high.
Way back.
At the Maisels,
way back. And then it's the a public Wings thing. And like, she sees other women's bodies, but she's like being horrible about it, like with the rash thing. She's all over the place, which, in one hand, makes sense as a fully complicated human being. But none of the other characters get to have that. So it just comes off as scattered, is confusing on purpose, like that. There's these twists and things. It's like, well, we're almost getting to the game. Now we're going to do a different thing. It's frustrating in series like this. And this is like something that made Mad Men unpleasant to watch.
Mm-hmm.
The character is Val?
No, the whole series. Okay. I hated everything about it.
And you watched all of it?
No, I watched none.
Okay.
I got like two episodes in, and I had actually one of the biggest fights that I ever had with my ex-girlfriend.
Was over Mad Men.
Yes.
I love that.
Wow.
That's right. That's the era we live in. This is the TV era.
But it's in these period pieces where there's such adherence to certain social problems and social ills and racism and sexism and homophobia, and right? And there's just like a perfect articulation of, yep, this is exactly how it was. Mm-hmm. But then every fucking else thing about this series is just like, oh, well, we took some liberties and we did some dancing around of the issue. So it's only when it serves the story that they want to tell that still will make no effort to actually be inclusive in any way. So we see this in Mrs. Maisel. This is my biggest critique of the series, is that it's like, oh, well, you know how things were in 59. It's not like there were like people of color around. It's not like there were gayer people around. There was not. Oh, but then we're going to completely fantasize how stand-up happens.
Mm-hmm.
You could have fantasized the whole freaking thing.
Right.
We still need to make sure that there's only white people that are employed on this goddamn show, and that no one gets to be gay. That's the other title of the show, is No One's Gay. Oh, and who's watching the children?
Oh, Esther and Ethan are dead.
They got written out.
Does
their parents know?
They are like gone for, I think they're like in little friggin' crates that you would put on an airplane or something.
Oh, remember like in the kissing?
You're right in that I've never been jarred or taken out of a story by like, oh, are too many people of color in this. Oh,
never.
Where am I?
Yeah.
And for this, I know. And it's such a magic trick rhetorical move whenever the criticism.
It's the same narrative over and over and over again. And it's not that like, oh, every historical drama needs to include every perceivable
like
gender, sexuality,
it's the Game of Thrones thing,
right,
where it's like there's literally no reason that Theon Greyjoy needs to be white.
Yeah.
There just isn't any reason.
He should be gray, if
Plus,
anything.
I would love to
Thank
watch
you.
Someday, I would love to watch a show that's set in, I don't know, mid-century-ish, that was a fantasy in that way. Like, there's just out queer people. There's more than two genders.
Yeah.
There's people of color from every nation, like all over the place.
But
still
yeah.
set in the 50s. Like, that to
and
me
if
would be
you
so much
watch
fun.
It,
there's also a part of Susie that I keep coming back to, and that is, this might be it. This might be Susie's full outness, is that she's asexual.
Yeah.
And like, there's a big part of me that identifies with that.
Totally.
And that to me is like part of the reason I love Susie as the character. It's frustrating to watch the kind of writers do this in this way, which is like give a little bit and then not and fully and like make a very on the nose inference and then dial it all the way back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Susie might just be asexual, and that's fine too, of course. But
not on this show.
Yeah.
It's a bummer. It's something we'll keep coming back to the more and more they like keep baiting us with it. Like maybe.
Yeah.
But anyway. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Now, unlike anything I've ever talked about on the air, I actually stand by Squarespace. I actually do because I've used it for everything I've made. Literally, GilmoreGuysShow.com, the very website for this very podcast, was made using Squarespace. How beautiful is that? KevinTPorter.com, I made that using Squarespace. My old bake shop website, that was made using Squarespace. Because you can do it all with Squarespace. You can sell content on your website. So exclusive stuff behind a paywall. You can sell memberships, courses, or sell files your customers can download, like PDFs, music, or eBooks. You can do that with Squarespace. You can do analytics with Squarespace. So you can figure out who's visiting your website and why. And figure out how to get traffic and where's it coming from. You can also have people do flexible payments on Squarespace. Make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. Accepts credit cards, PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. How nice is that? You can also do email campaigns, so there's constant outreach for your stuff and people know where to find you. So I'm going to let you know where to find Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/GilmoreGuys to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. That's squarespace.com/GilmoreGuys. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now let's talk about your social battery. Maybe right now it's bursting at the seams with energy. Maybe it's a little drained. Maybe you're one of those people like my friend with their phone battery that keeps it 2% all the time, even when they stay home all day. And they definitely could charge up if they wanted to, but they don't. Well, regardless of where it is, it's important to understand why it is the way it is. Why is the battery low when it gets low? Is it because you're feeling less social? Is it because you're feeling sad? Is it because of emotions you've yet to identify? Or maybe just boundaries you haven't set for yourself yet? Either way, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? How do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, maybe you don't. Maybe you need a little more alone time. Well, either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. This is so important because I've been in therapy for 10 plus years, for some would say, technically, 11 years this month, and it's helped me so much understand where I get my energy from, how I use my energy, how to better use my energy, and how to maintain things in a way that's sustainable and healthy and good. And that's to do, of course, with boundaries, but also just understanding who I am and what I want. And I couldn't have done so much of that work without therapy. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GilmoreGuys today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GilmoreGuys.
I feel like, yeah, getting back to like the poor Abe stuff, this really is just the story of a man who doesn't know what's going on.
He doesn't know his children.
He
so
doesn't
much
know his
happened.
Children. And isn't it interesting?
In a one episode arc.
That it feels like he's more upset by the Noah stuff than he is by the Midge stuff.
That might also just be because he doesn't want the rest of the family to know, because Midge's is so embarrassing.
Yeah.
It's so revolting. It's so outside of his realm of understanding and acceptance that he can't even think to speak of it. So he's like threatens until after. I love that. Until after. And we go home. Wait till we unpack.
Yeah.
No. We're going to wait till after Hanukkah. Hanukkah.
Yeah.
That's so cute. I think Noah's is taking part of Midge's outrage too.
Mm-hmm.
Because he can be public ish with it. He can at least go to Rose. He can at least speak to Rose right. about it. And he can't fathom speaking to Rose right now about what Midge is up to.
Also, maybe it's sort of like
cumulative.
The older sibling yeah. thing. There he's absorbing the anger.
I love the little snippet of dialogue that
he has when he runs in and tries to, he like turns the heat up all the way on Rose's hair dryer.
Yeah.
She's like, what are you doing? And he's like, we don't know, you know, whatever. Something about Noah. Yeah. If that's his real name. It's so dumb and hokey, but I loved it so much. It's like, of course
it was dumb
is.
And hokey.
How do we know? Yeah. We named him. I'm calling him Son X.
Yeah, the first time I watched it, I didn't like it. I thought it was too broad. But then the second time, yeah, I thought it really spoke to the kind of mania
that he's just getting out there
of that character. Because I do think ultimately they play this Abe Midge stuff with a lot of emotional truth. Mm-hmm. I thought it was like the core of it is really grounded. And like his kind of questions, like when the stand-up guy comes up during the...
I liked that a lot.
During the Catskills show.
Come on, Papa, you've got to be enjoying this a little.
I'm enjoying it thoroughly. What makes you think I'm not enjoying it?
I don't know, your sphinx-like detachment?
I guess I don't know what funny is.
And then he goes on to say...
close in the guts.
Yeah. And then
that hit me really close in the guts as well. Yeah, that phrase, right, that right normal phrase that we've all...
When he says, are you as funny as he is? And then there's like a little back and forth. And then she goes, he's like, well, are you? And she says, yeah.
Yeah.
I am.
Funnier. I believe she goes, yeah. Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Andrea Martin, you both know the great Andrea Martin, mm-hmm. right? So there's this story in her book that this so reminded me of. Mm. And it talks about her relationship with her father. Andrea Martin, this like kind of legendary comedian woman, like a star of Broadway, Tony winner, SCTV, Great News on NBC. And she talks about with her father, it is really tough to talk about comedy stuff and about acting stuff. And she tells this one story about like every time I did something, he wouldn't talk about how funny I was or how good I was. He would just say, your hair looks good.
Wow.
Or like, or how I looked.
Yeah.
And then she was telling this story about she was in the car with him. That's like 20 years ago or more, whenever she was in Hedwig and the Angry Inch and that movie came out. And she said, what did you think of it? And he said, I didn't really like the movie, but I thought your hair looked really pretty.
Oh my gosh.
And then for the first time ever, she said, Dad, when you say that, it really hurts my feelings. When you say that, it makes me, you know, feel lesser than and not valued. Oh. And then he starts crying and he says, I guess I just don't know that much about acting, but I know it's pretty.
Oh.
And it's just
that's gonna make me puke.
So this stuff with the Abe and Midge relationship
puke comes out of my eyes sometimes, and it's salty water.
And it's watery. It's watery puke. So just like the different ways people give and receive love and communicate it. Mm-hmm. I feel like some of
the ways people communicate it is like unacceptable.
Right.
You know.
And I'm just kidding. And for the Abe and Midge stuff, I feel like this show is as concerned with Abe and Midge, more so than Midge and Rose, the way that Gilmore was way more concerned with Lorelai and Emily.
So much.
It's such a reverse. Yeah. Like, it feels so much more like Amy doing her dad
stuff. It's a show about a daddy's girl.
Kind of.
Yeah, it's a show about a daddy's girl.
Oh, please don't do that voice.
She's like a daddy's
girl. No, it's not like
I'm going to throw you out the
She's
window.
Like, no, I'm not a daddy's girl. I'm a papa's girl.
How did this end with me getting thrown out a window?
You. It's her turn. That was out.
No one ever called me a daddy's girl. I'm a papa's girl, if anything.
Papa. Just keep chewing those lifesavers right into the mic.
I'm sorry.
So anyway.
Okavine.
So the emotional
is
truth.
Is it Kevin or Kevin?
It's Kevin.
I've known this.
I've just been polite and let people mispronounce it.
This is a weird episode.
That would be so you to do that.
This did remind me of like a lot of personal things, like with my dad and him. I'm so lucky to have parents that are like, was so weirdly supportive. They're so weird. I love them to death. They're so supportive of stand-up.
When did you start doing stand-up?
5 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You seem like I've been doing it longer. And they were psyched?
Like, cautious at first.
Yeah.
And my dad didn't like some of it, and he kind of did the very gruff, oh my gosh. The whole first scene where he's silent and he's just seething was like, oh, I've made my dad do that a couple hundred times.
Really?
Yeah. And he was like, we had our dad. We didn't have moms for a while. So like, oh, that really hit right off the bat.
Mm.
And then when he's like trying to mitigate, he's controlled. The whole thing with Abe then becomes control. Yeah. I am control. I am Papa. I'm going to tell you what to do for that. Like that hit home too. But I am lucky to have those parents that are supportive in that way. And that like, even if they don't love it, they still love the process. They love that I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is your
I feel like there was a period of time in which people's parents didn't want them to be stand-ups because of the notorious lack of like any ability to make money.
Yeah, there's a lot of stigma.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel like that's exactly true as well anymore, especially since so many people know about stand-up as an art form and they can kind of come and go and do it. And like nobody – you don't have to pursue it as a way of making all of your living.
Right.
Even to do it consistently throughout your whole life. So it's like I think parents have woken up to that a little bit. And then they also think you can have success. Well, my parents also – I think wanted me to perform and they thought I should do it anyway. So when I finally started at the age of like 28, they were like, okay, yeah.
I started when I was 30. Yeah. Yeah,
they're like, yeah.
Yeah.
But I was such a, I was not like, it wasn't like I was a big earner before then. So I wasn't like, wasn't, you know what I mean? Yep. It's like, they, you can't leave law. You know, there's like, no. I was,
the hospital needs you. No, like,
who's going to open the boutique store in deep Brooklyn at 11 a.m. sort of? You know, what, it was like,
if I managed to get there.
If you managed to maybe not have a hangover that day.
I will say, I think there's a special kind of very very sweet heartbreak when your father says, in all sincerity, how's your Patreon doing?
Oh, cute. That's true. Yeah.
It's like heartwarming.
But it's heartwarming and breaking at the set because it's like.
Yeah. There's a slice in there too.
I want you to be proud of more
so
than a Patreon.
He's so cautiously optimistic.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, are you going to be okay, buddy?
Oh, boy. Yeah.
How's your Patreon doing?
That's kind of the subtext. Oh, yeah. With
that's
a lot
so
of
touching
it.
Though. And we're lucky in that way.
It
we're
is. And lucky. Yeah. And I think we are. And we should be, we should recognize that more and more.
Can I really quick touch on some of my favorite lines from this episode?
Nice.
Because wow, were there some
what if we were like
doozies?
No.
I'd like to quick touch on the Around the World song and dance that occurred.
It might have been in China.
Well, too many good, it's that funny.
This is the
China.
This is the Around the World in 80 Days cultural appropriation festival. That
they could have done anything.
They could have done anything. Although, according to some of our Jewish listeners, they said this is accurate to Catskill stuff.
Yeah,
but again, like what we were talking about with gay and POC representation.
What else
like,
is
you don't
accurate
have
to
accurate.
Catskills? Only white people worked there? Was that also accurate?
Yep.
Is that seems kind of...
No, there was that black guy in the kitchen, Alice.
Right.
Recognize the black guy in the kitchen.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to erase the black guy in the kitchen.
That's black guy in the kitchen erase. Sure if I've ever heard it.
I'm sorry, and I apologize, and I take full responsibility.
What were some of your favorite lines, Caitlin?
China. There will be two kinds of cake. He says it's going to be so-and-so's birthday. Yeah. There will be two kinds of cake. Yeah. Over-announcements.
the announcements are always...
They keep me going. So-and-so, your husband will wait for you on the porch for 5 more minutes.
Oh, yeah, in the previous episode. Yeah.
When Abe's walking down... In the Bell Labs or whatever, he's like, you know, I did all my own hiring. Almost hired a woman. It's like,
oh
wow.
Yeah. I'm very diverse. Yeah, almost hired a woman.
I insisted they let me recruit my own team because I wanted a certain diversity. I almost hired a woman.
When Susie bursts their bubble in the cabin, none of that is going to happen.
That was maybe my favorite scene of the episode.
All the girls being like, I'm going to be a poet, and I'm going to be the next Lucy Gray. Yeah.
No, it's good. If the singing career is going to happen, I just got to get out there and do it. You can totally do it, DC. You've got a fantastic voice.
Like Rosemary Clooney.
Better.
I'm going to be the next Lucille Ball.
Oh, no doubt, Sally.
You're a born comedian. And just so you guys know, when I get famous, I'm not taking any of you with me.
Look out, Lucille Ball.
I'm Broadway bound.
Oh, I saw her do Doll's House in high school. She made me cry.
Your father's a big producer, right?
Yeah, but I'm changing my last name so that when I make it, I know I made it on my own.
How about our resident poet?
You're like the next Emily Dickinson Pearl.
You're all invited to my Pulitzer ceremony.
You know, none of that's going to happen, right? Especially the poet.
Night, everybody.
There was something so sweet about that scene, and just like, I feel like to his cred, to little the Nell of the Palladino universe's cred, Daniel did a good job of like,
they wheeled him in.
I'm just writing wistful young women talking about their dreams and time. I'm going to be this, I'm going to be that. And then just one just laying a fart over all of it. Like,
none of that is going to happen.
Yeah.
I thought that was great.
It was really well written in that way. That's like, yes. Yeah, what was Susie doing in this cabin? She has to be in there. This has to happen.
You know that, right?
It reminded me of exactly of Rose with the university students.
Totally.
Like, so what is your future
totally.
Here?
Here's one of my favorite lines. This is Noah and Joel at the breakfast table.
Stop, please.
Maybe we should take this away from the table.
What, so you can beat me up? No, thanks.
I couldn't beat you up.
Yeah, I'm completely out of shape.
I'm sore from playing horseshoe.
What is this? Great. And then he says, what is this, like the award for sissy?
A sissy competition or something like that. Yeah.
That was very funny.
Yeah, so that was pretty
got competitive
great.
About it.
Dumb ones.
Yeah, I love, to go back to the Susie thing, I love that she said that because they were all like, I was like, what is this? What is going on? Like, all these girls are like, oh, you got the best voice. I'm like, ew, like, why are they doing this to each other? Like, what a weird, like... It almost sounded like the girls were like secretly competing with each other at something. You know what I mean? They're like
it was so
saccharine.
Cute.
Yeah. And then I loved Susie coming in and saying that.
But it's so often we see a group of women portrayed on the show that aren't the main characters.
Yeah, they were
that
really
aren't with contempt that the showrunner doesn't feel like some sort of animosity towards them. Like, look at these dumb girls.
These
yeah, that's
idiots.
True.
Honestly, like that's like we were talking about that in the Rishi episode. Like that's most of the female-centric scenes in the show that don't revolve around Midge and Susie.
Yeah.
And on Gilmore stuff, too.
Yeah.
Well, did you guys notice... Low-key. Okay, so this is the Around the World in 80 Days, and then Susie's one of the backup dancers in this.
Yeah.
Brazil.
Oh, yeah,
for the coffee song.
It's so funny.
I'm going to say it only happens twice, Alice, but I'm going to register this as a Paladinoism, the coffee song. They got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil because Miss Patty sings that on Gilmore Girls, too.
Way down among Brazilians, coffee beans grow by the billions, so they have to find those extra cups to fill. They got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil.
That's a cute.
So
we've
I
got two.
Say, Paladino. I know.
So I say, from this day forward,
we declare there's a Paladinoism.
There's a Paladinoism in every coffee.
You all poop.
From sea to shining sea.
It does make you poop.
Oh, speaking of Joel.
So, how was the gig?
Oh, we're having that conversation.
Yeah, we are.
Well, I spotted Papa almost from the get-go, but I had to keep going. I said things I barely remember. I heard laughs, some pretty big laughs.
Kind of wish I was there.
Yeah.
Are you Team Joel?
Interesting.
Yeah.
I become, throughout season two, I do.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm so staunchly not.
Because at first, God, he just really pulled some
dumb shit.
They course corrected
shit dickery.
It. Yeah. They did what, hey, shit dickery is a good word for it. They did the opposite of whatever deaning is
they undeaned him.
They undeaned him.
Re-undeaned him.
They redeemed him.
They it's very redeeming.
Yeah.
It's very,
a redeeming
some of his redeeming
line.
Qualities yep. are really coming through.
But I mean, listen, in this show, Zachary Levi as Benjamin, Michael Zegan as Joel. What is this if not just Max Medeiz nuts and Christopher all over again?
It's Max Medeiz.
He's wow. Max Medeiz nuts. He's a doctor. Medeiz nuts was a teacher. It's not
true.
Different. You can't invest in it. Zachary Levi, Shazam. He's not going to be a regular and going to be like, hey, come here, Esther. You're my daughter
he is
now.
Shazam.
Yes.
That's true.
He's Shazam.
That's not a metaphor. He's in the movie Shazam.
That's what I was
wondering.
Hoping.
I could tell you were wondering. Yeah, I could tell.
Hoping. Cautiously hoping.
It wasn't a metaphor.
Here's the thing. I'm Team Joel when it comes to like, no, he's now a redeemable human being. He's going to go on to lead a very happy life with another family and another woman
right.
somewhere else. Not for Midge.
Yeah, I would be really happy with that too, actually.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
I'd be happy with that as well.
I would be happy with that too because I don't, like, if it means that Midge gets to do stand-up and, like, get, like, really pursue it, that would be great. And I don't need there to be, like, a Joel reunion at all because, like, in a way, like, if they do it, are they going to do it right? I don't think so.
And it feels like at the end of this episode, they're trying to put a little bow on it. Like, okay, it's time to dance with someone
else.
Yeah,
but that's so much symmetry. There was so much symbolism. Should we end this with a dance like we started it with a dance? Yeah. Should we do this? Like, they had so much, like, that this lines up, and now they have their, okay, and they see each other with the other people, and blah, blah, blah,
I thought it was kind of lovely, yeah.
Yeah, but it's clear. I felt like it was a clear, like,
BS move.
Trap. Yeah, like the, it's a clear like, trippity well, trap. This is how we're prolonging this a little longer.
I'm not charmed by the cyclical nature of this. Like,
right.
It's not right. He's into it. She's
doesn't
not.
Feel
she's
tired,
into it.
Yeah.
He's not. Already, like, by mid-season two, so, like.
I know too much, but, the, yeah.
There needs to be some sort of, like, dramatic shakeup for it to be worth it. Ultimately.
They're not meant for, they're not good for each other. And Joel already showed way too many of his cards way early on of, like, mm-hmm. I can't handle.
When he needs to be showing his credit cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Almost.
That's right.
Almost.
That's right.
Wait, are you is this the problematic Mrs. Mm-hmm. Maisel again?
Tell him.
He's showing all of his cards, but he needs to be showing his credit cards. Am I right?
Women be shopping.
The crazy thing about women, especially women in New York, is women be shopping.
You just do all the classic
things. Yeah. I am shopping.
Mrs. Maisel does Hot Pockets. Hot Pockets.
Hot Pockets.
They're hot all the time.
Get out of here.
It's not warm pockets. It's not lukewarm pockets. It's Hot Pockets.
Is that his famous bit?
I think that's like Jim Gaffigan's signature, right?
Oh, Hot Pockets. Right, yeah. Right.
And she tries to sing it, but she can't. Let's do some Twitter Q&A.
Tweet.
We got a good amount of questions.
We did. Even I saw them.
I was, and you never checked.
And I never checked.
They put them on Instagram. They're everywhere now.
This time, they're on For Your Consideration billboards as I drive in.
Okay, so Lauren asks, kind of what we were talking about before, why are Midge and Abe apparently the only two members of the human race, or at least in the main cast, who are able to correctly identify Susie as a woman? I still think that it gets back to this like special shared thing that they both have in terms of like...
They just see people and that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and I think it also goes with like Abe's sensitivity to other things in his environment. Like he cannot stand it when what's his name is on the phone in the game room. Like he can't stand these like big kind of like he can't like there's a sensitivity to him that is just like plain. It's very simple. It's not really deserving of a lot of celebration.
Yeah.
But I think that he and Midge both through that of just like
perfect way of describing it.
You're a freaking lady. What's the big there's nothing.
This is a completely like lukewarm take, but like what if remember Susie has never ever once when she's been misgendered, corrected anyone?
Yeah.
So, like...
That's the other reason I think
funny if, like, Susie was like, hey, everybody's
Susie.
Right, to be honest, gender's dead. Like,
well, no, she's
in 1950, like, she's just like, yeah, what? Why does it matter,
fake.
You know, to you? And you need to label, that's fine for you, you know?
And then, like, Midge says, like, oh, yeah, she's my manager. And Abe's like, well, let's say they, them. Like, just in case. It's like,
Midge,
Abe, what the hell?
You serious about this business? You need to be saying they, them.
This is where I, like, stop myself from my overly identifying with Susie. Because I'm like, no, I think this is more projection than actually what
right,
I'm saying.
Right.
Is like,
yeah.
Susie's on my side of, like, gender's out the window, the spectrum is whatever, everyone is, and also asexual. Well... Okay, this might be me. The calls might be coming from inside the house. All right. Okay.
Roma asked on Twitter, it seems that...
Did you like my movie?
I'm the movie. Did you like me? Turns out maids have feelings too.
It's like Beauty and the Beast.
And they get very
like
sad.
Like Cogsworth. The movie comes alive.
No, yeah.
It'd be a little DVD case. Except Netflix doesn't
consider
point out DVDs.
Consider me.
What would be
vote
the inanimate
for
object?
Me. Vote for me. I'm best picture, don't you see? I have black and white shots and really great cinematography.
Yalitza, she's so great. Did you know indigenous people, they could act and do everything that you already knew that I feel stupid. Oh,
Alfonso
boy, yeah.
Cuarón, he really did get it on.
He's not part of it too, which is great. It's not Alfonso Cuarón. It's its own movie. You know what I mean? Like it's.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So funny that it's not him.
Anyway, the movie Roma asked. It seems that Amy Sherman-Palladino extended the Lorelai effect, which is the woman being charming and wooing everyone who meets her, to Susie. It extended to Susie in this episode.
That's spreading.
What does this do to her character? Because it was the kind
Wait, what does this do to her character?
What does this do to her character? Because it was funny. The joke in this was like, isn't it crazy how all these people love this woman unconditionally when this is a regular thing that occurs to the protagonists of this show? Like, everyone thinks Susie's amazing and charming
well,
and
she's
funny.
Just,
and
it's not, yeah.
I don't see it as that because
I don't see it
isn't
that much.
It's Midge's world reacting to Susie, and it's not like in Susie's world people treat Susie that way.
Right.
In Midge's world and in Susie's world, well, there's actually places where this isn't true for Midge. But in general, we live in a world that is like that where Midge is the most fantastic person in the world. Mm-hmm. But, like, we don't live in that world. Like, that's not the same for Susie. And Susie, I wouldn't say that the actions in this episode contradict that at
especially all. Especially back in the city.
Yeah.
Susie has a different universe and a different world. And I don't think that they think she's just like, oh, so charming and so perfect and so great. But she is inherently and instantly a part of a community. And that, I think, is new and novel. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is like really radical to Susie. Yeah.
The joke is the world. I think the joke is like that.
The joke is the world.
This community is so close-knit. And that, like, we're seeing it from her perspective, which is like, these people are weird. And her reaction. And Midge doesn't go around going like, why does everybody love me so much? You know what I mean? That's the difference.
Also the weird carry through of that weird boy.
Oh, Crisscross? I think we're done with Crisscross, thankfully.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
What a
Christ.
Nothing of a plot.
Oh, I thought I was like a little excited for the funniness and realized it reminded me of what's the name of the boy that we were talking about before that might have been asexual from Gilmore Girls?
Kirk.
It reminded me of like a Kirk brand of comedy, of like humor. Yeah. Like it's it's a little out there, it's a little left field.
That's
goofy.
Their version of,
yeah,
of
like
dark,
really intense, for no reason. All of a sudden,
That's true. Yeah,
that was weird though.
We're done with it, right? Yeah.
Why did we keep it in? It wasn't didn't go anywhere.
Just layers, man. Just layers and layers on this.
But aren't you glad they spent time on this instead of Susie's sexuality?
So much.
Thank you.
So many side.
Oh, we didn't talk about where Shirley straight up wore a rice patty hat. When she was doing Mahjong.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of dumb Daniel stuff in this. Dumb Daniel, back at it again with the mediocre
dumb
episodes.
Dumb Daniel.
Dumb Daniel. Like, dumb you know, Daniel. Astrid mistaking Shirley for a bear at breakfast. Oh,
that,
I thought you were a bear.
Because she was so
the first time I watched that happened, I walked away. I was like, you know what? I do need to do the dishes, whatever.
But overall,
and then I like came back. It's too ridiculous.
I got to give it up to dumb Daniel. Back at it again. Daniel, he's animal now. Yeah, from the Muppets.
He's animal.
Because the
more
core
plot
like,
pause.
All the ape stuff is good. The ape stuff
is so good.
Mournful, sad Abe. Works on this show.
Struggling, trying to stay in control. Abe works. It's
even like the bummer remix of the chicken fat thing when he's in his romper on
the dock.
Oh my
God, that was really right up to the edge, though. That was really toeing the line.
That's getting like a little dirty dancing in terms of like
a
disappointed daddy.
Please tell me that you sampled that audio for that song.
Oh, I did. No, I'll drop it in now.
Gross song.
Take it.
There was a time in which it wasn't a gross song. It was an anthem. That was their thank you next.
Oh my.
Chicken. Fat.
Take
chicken.
Give it
fat.
Back.
One taught me
I'm
chicken.
So fucking grateful for my fat.
Chicken.
Chicken.
Fat. Wait, is this anything? One taught me wheat. One taught me rice. One taught me frosted. He was real nice. Thank you. Checks. Thank you. Checks. It's like different kinds. She loves cereal.
One taught me fried. One taught me marinade.
One taught me roasted.
One taught me
chicken.
Chicken. Fat.
Goodbye, listeners.
That was it.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's like you can feel them turning it off. It's amazing.
In 2019. What do you feel like is the value of a good TV show? What does it mean to you to be enraptured with great television?
So I've been in a pretty wild and woolly year and now live in LA, and I have never taken TV seriously. And I still mostly refuse to, but there's things that stand out, and there's a proximity that's like really exhilarating and really exciting that like being asked about, like, oh, what do you think? And not just on podcast stuff, but, like, from representation, you know, like, in management, you know, being like, well, think about shows that you want to create. And so, like, I am very much radically thinking about TV in an entirely different way, new ways all the time. And I feel very lucky and fortunate that I haven't ever really spent a ton of like obsessive time with TV because so much stuff is new to me. Yeah. There's a couple like standouts. There's a couple like standards that I really like, you know, enveloped and just like, no. It's like ate up growing up.
Like Orville.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Orville was a big nostalgia point for a lot of us.
Pukes, yeah. Little tiny pukes every time you say it.
From your eyes, which we established were salty. Yeah, pukes, which are tears.
But this is one of the shows that like I would have absolutely been into regardless, I think, of my like, even if I wasn't in comedy, I think I'd be a fan of the show. I would not be dissecting it to the level that we do.
Right.
And I would have just let it wash over me and just been like, what a enjoyable time.
Right. Yeah.
But I like, and I'm so glad that it's a part of my life now that I like get into like character nuances and development, and because I'm learning as I'm enjoying it. Mm-hmm. It's like that's important.
Yeah, it's fun. It is a learning process when you digest it at this rate.
Absolutely.
I'm still going week to week. I've not watched 207, 8, or 9.
Me too. It's crazy.
Your restraint.
Yeah. Alice, we made a promise at the end of last episode that we would watch 206 together.
And we're coming up on 206?
Did we just watch 206?
Jesus almighty.
Alice, this is 206.
Shit, Kevin.
Did we watch 206
I was
together?
In San Francisco.
You were in town this week. You got back Monday.
I was sick.
I didn't know
this
that.
Week.
Well, watch, make it a...
Because every time I tell you I'm sick, you offer to bring stuff over and I feel bad.
I said, hey, do you need any
You're
soup?
Such a
and then Alice said, or I said, oh, never mind. You have a boyfriend.
Alice said, shut up and leave me.
Oh, this is funny.
Wow.
I said, never mind. You have a boyfriend. And you said you should just make that an auto reply on your text.
What a meanie. And what I meant was like, because we had had that discussion on air before where you were like, oh, I've never been the friend that's like the boyfriend replacement while you don't have a boyfriend or whatever. And like, we were just joking about that. You're duckying out. But you don't.
I've gone full ducky in 2019.
No, you're important to me.
Hey, you're very important to me, and I love you.
And you're important to my boyfriend loves you, and he
we can pretend to be boyfriends anytime, Kevin.
He wants you to be in my life.
I love your boyfriend too. I met him, and I was really sincerely. I was like, good. He's good. He's good.
Really good.
I was wailing in the streets of Brooklyn. He's great.
He's good.
No,
not because he's great. People.
Oh boy. Well, Caitlin, thanks so much for joining us
Thank
on the
you
marvelous
for having
Mrs.
Me.
Maisel.
Are we done?
What a fun episode.
Sorry, this was the episode that broke the podcast.
I think we got three people at a 10 level of energy because we're recording on a Saturday and you're so fun to talk to. Yes, ma'am.
Quick question before we
go. Yes, ma'am.
And I know you made reference to it, but we didn't really get into it. Do either of you believe the doctor as an actual human being?
Not really.
As an interested party in Midge? What is he to
he's
you?
He's too much.
Benjamin?
I want to point
he's
out
my
that
spirit
he's,
animal.
He's like...
get the fuck out of
yeah,
here.
We're going to storm you out.
He's literally like, giving me life.
He is... He's doing the thing that nobody else is on the show is doing where it's like, I'm doing a 50s guy.
I'm
in
being
a way.
Withholding.
He's doing the accent of like somebody in the mid-century. He's doing the like.
He's up to a lot.
He's doing like, well, you know what? I've got a lot of friends. You're like, he's doing that, and that's not helping. But it is making him also into a cartoon of a
it
man.
It is.
He's a cartoon man. And this show would be okay if there was a cartoon man, but like, it can't be the
you can't also
love
be
interest of the main character.
And the only character that is withholding.
Yeah.
Can't also be the cartoon
Isn't
one.
That interesting?
It doesn't.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
It's like a stingy John Arbuckle.
I can't wait for you to watch 207.
Dagwood.
And I can't wait to hear the podcast about it.
We can't wait either. Well, we're recording these a lot
Yeah,
in
we
advance.
Should. I promise to watch it with you.
You promise to now, watch 207
point,
with me?
Now, at this point, it's a joke. Where I promise it, and it's almost
just
like,
watch it right
God
now.
God damn it! I
here
don't
today.
Like. I want to watch it with you.
Alice doesn't like knowing that she has the capacity to actually hurt me.
Oh my God, you're right. I just pointed something out. Well, I need to go back to therapy to be real with you because you're hitting on some real.
That's okay.
You should be. I should be Venmoing you.
No, you can just talk to me and use me and lose me on a weekly basis as per your want.
I'm sorry
you
if
are,
I didn't get through Twitter questions.
Yeah.
No, I think we got it.
Oh, we're good.
You can find Caitlin Warehouser on all the things at Uncle Kate. Uncle C-A-I-T.
Thank you.
You can find Alice Wehrlein at Alice Wehrlein everywhere. And you can find me at
Heaven.
Real Donald J. Come on.
Real Donald J.
Because you want me to die, Caitlin?
No, because you're from
You can
heaven.
Find me outside your bedroom window.
Ew.
Like Penn Badgley. No, I would never do that. What if
he doesn't know where you live.
Kevin T. Porter.
Yeah, Kevin T. Porter, blah, 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 blah. Oh, and hey, live show coming up.
Promote it.
March 23rd, okay. Dynasty Typewriter. By the time this comes out, tickets are on sale. Going to do some stand-up and a podcast on the same
night. You guys,
night?
Here's the deal. Do you understand that what he just said right now? It's going to be a live show. It's going to be a live episode of Maisel, like the things you've come to expect. Aww. If you've ever come to a Gilmore Guys live show, it's amazing. Lots of fun, lots of clips, and you can actually see the things on screen and talk about the visual stuff.
But also, we're doing Saturday Night at the Gaslight.
We're doing Saturday at the Gaslight. We're dressing up. There's a fucking dress code. And Kevin T. Porter is going to do stand-up. You guys, do you understand?
You don't have to say it like it's a big joke.
It is a big joke. No, I'm just kidding. It's a big deal. I'm excited. It's going to be so fun. So come out and support him. It's going to be so great. I can't wait to see all... Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no. Alice.
I can't wait to see all of you.
I can't wait to see all of you. Thanks,
Your
Caitlin.
World debut.
My world debut. World Hopefully not. That's not
debut.
My debut. Thanks for joining us, Caitlin.
Thank you for having me.
Let's go out with the coffee song.
Thank God, not the bumblebee.
Oh, we can do
There's
fly the
bumblebee. There's a whole lot of chicken fat in this coffee.
You got a lot of chicken fat in my mug.
It was the original bulletproof.
Ew, gross. All right, we'll see you next week. Bye.
Mix some chicken fat in some
They've
coffee.
They've got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. You can't get cherry soda.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.